Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right, welcome to Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and I know you're sitting there wondering why I didn't say what day it was, because this will tell you.
Start spreading the news.
Yeah, you know what that means. Not only is it Friday, but Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
I'm all right, and since it's Friday, it's and Frank's singing, we know it's TGIF for most of the people listening.
Hopefully, yes. All right, if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, sportstimeradio.com is your answer for that. You know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so something will pop up there sometime tomorrow, hopefully in the morning, but you never know. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, we're still working on getting Stu on Twitter, but feel free to hit me up at Burke Time, and I will forward any questions you have over to Stu, as long as they're not dirty. So take that. Oh, all right. Well, I saw just before we got started here that the NBA handed out its MVP award. Way too many initials there for me. And for the second year in a row, it was Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks who gets the win. Obviously, playoff performance didn't count. He got 85 of 101 first place votes. And not surprisingly, the other 16 went to LeBron James. I don't watch enough NBA to really know any better. Have you seen enough to know if this guy was the right choice?
No.
But yeah, here's how the rest of it shuffled out. James obviously finished second. James Harden came in third. It was Luka Doncic fourth. And then rounding out the top five was Kawhi Leonard. So, and Antetokounmpo becomes the first guy since Hakeem Olajuwon back in 93-94 to win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year in the same year. Jordan did it back in 87-88 too. So only three guys have done it. You know, I mean, I know obviously he's a great player. You know, they stunk in the playoffs, but you know, not completely his fault. You know, I believe he's a free agent. Do you see the Bucks keeping him, or is he the next version of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and they pack him up and try to get something for him?
Well, that's a good question, because Milwaukee's not a major market team, so I'm not sure, do they have enough financial backing to support giving him a lucrative new contract or not?
Well, you know, they got the salary cap in the NBA, and with that big TV money they're getting from the Mickey Mouse Network, you know, I believe, you know, every team is kind of a player in this. You know, they can offer him that supermax deal that nobody else can. So I think it's really just kind of up to him if he wants to stay there or not. You've got a question, do they have enough for, you know, to win a title? I don't think the way they're constructed right now they are, but can they attract the right players to do that? You know, Milwaukee isn't exactly a destination spot in the NBA, so is having him there enough to get another guy to come in or two other guys to come in?
Well, it's hard to say now because of the unusual aspects of this season, but certainly if a player who has not yet won a title looks towards Milwaukee as not a great place to to play the game, but with him and the supporting cast enough to win the title, they might give it a shot.
Yeah, you know, I mean, at least you kind of possibly hope, you know, that they would think that way. You know, I'm just, you know, I'm never sure with guys now with how they, you know, kind of take these things or how it kind of works out. But
well, they didn't very well in the playoffs, obviously, but they won more games than any other team in the NBA. So you would think that maybe if they re-signed him and got one other top-quality player, they certainly would be one of the odds-on favorites to win it all next season.
So, yeah, you know, it would make sense, and I want to check and see what kind of free agents there are currently on the market here. Well, you know, technically Anthony Davis will be a free agent. He has a I'm trying to think if he has an opt-out or not, but, you know, there's no way the Lakers are letting him go. He's far and away the biggest name out there. Other than that, you're looking at, and this is the power ranking they have on hoopsrumor.com, so that's what I'm going off of. The top, what would be 10, Davis obviously 1, Brandon Ingram is 2, Fred Van Fleet, then it's Montrezl Harrell, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Davis Bertans, Malik Beasley, Danilo Gallinelli, Joe Harris, and Serge Ibaka round out the top 10 free agents. I don't see them signing any of those guys makes them a championship contender, do you?
No. They're in a bad spot because it doesn't look like the top 10 are all that great. And as pointed out, they're never going to get Davis to leave the Lakers. So I don't know what they're going to do. Would they decide to bite the bullet and not offer him a new contract and start to go into a mode where they could maybe get 2 or 3 good players and at least compete for the title next year, but maybe in a year or two after that, maybe possibly be the number one contender again? It's a tough decision for them to make.
So, yeah, and looking here, he is under – Antetokounmpo is under contract for next year. It's the year after that where he would come out into free agency, you know, just depending on how they want to handle it, you know, if they could, you know, deal him and get a big enough haul back to make it worth it. You know, I know immediately when the rumor came up, the Golden State Warriors expressed interest. I don't know who or what they would, you know, it would probably consist of a bazillion draft picks for that deal to get done. But that could be really interesting if he, you know, if he got traded there, or, you know, B, if he just decided to sign there like Kevin Durant did, you know, after next year.
Or else does Milwaukee have enough talent on the roster to maybe dangle a player that would give them maybe a couple of decent players in return and go for it all for next season?
So, yeah, you know, you do wonder if there's, you know, somebody they can move with maybe a draft pick or, you know, multiple draft picks, just depending on, you know, how, if or how their roster is constructed. And I was hoping to come across their roster here, but it doesn't look like they have it listed. I'll have to go, you know, go somewhere else to get that, because I'm trying to think, you know, with the exception of Chris Middleton and I believe a former Bull, Tony Snell, I'm not quite sure, you know, again, I'm not keeping up with the NBA like I should. I'm not quite sure who is on the Bucks roster here. Oh, speaking of former Bulls, Kyle Korver was on their roster this year. Yeah, I mean, there's not a bunch of big-time names that'll jump out at you. They got the Lopez brothers, if, you know, that interests a team, but I honestly don't think it would. They have some veteran guards in Eric Bledsoe and Wesley Matthews, but I don't know if they have enough to bring back that kind of complementary player they would need. So they're in an interesting spot.
Yeah, what do you think caused their demise? So they played so poorly in the playoffs after winning so many games during the regular season. Is it just that the regular season doesn't really mean much?
Yeah, for whatever reason, when the season restarted, the Bucks really didn't play very well. So, they had their struggles there. Then you combine that with the fact that when you look at what's going on, they ran into a very hot Miami Heat team. If you don't know, the Heat won game two of their series with Boston.
Right.
So they're up 2-0 and just two games away from going to the NBA Finals. And then, I don't believe Antetokounmpo played very well. He didn't. I don't think he shot very well, and he's obviously their guy. So when he's not coming through, and then he got hurt, so you're asking these guys, like Chris Middleton or Brooke Lopez, because Robin is really just kind of a bench player who doesn't get very many minutes now. It's a lot to ask for those guys to pick up the slack and be like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to go out and, score 30 now and, stop Jimmy Butler, which is what, Antetokounmpo would have been assigned to do. So, it kind of led to their demise.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, how are the teams, Milwaukee, any of the contenders, going into next season? Are they going to consider it as a regular season that's going to be played and plan accordingly? Or are they taking the current pandemic and situation as well when they make their long-range decisions?
Yeah, the NBA still hasn't announced what their plans are for next season. So, we're still waiting for that. I mean, we don't know, when they're going to start or, how many games they're planning on playing. I'm guessing since the season here is going to go to almost November 1st. They won't be playing 82 games. The question just becomes how many and when. And, I'm sure the teams have a better idea than like you and I do, because they haven't really made any announcements. So, they're probably able to plan a little better. But, you do wonder how some of the teams will look at it and, just be kind of like, well, okay, what do we do and how do we adjust? Especially these teams who kind of, maybe played a little better than we thought. Toronto looked like a really good team coming into the playoffs. I think, were they the 2 seed in the East? They were the 2 seed. So the 1 and 2s got, they got bounced. And, we're looking at a 3 seed or a 5 seed going to the finals.
Yeah, Toronto's another team that doesn't seem to do well in the playoffs.
Yeah, with the exception, obviously, of last year.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah.
That was an exception.
You wonder, what a team like Philadelphia is thinking, because they were supposed to have so much potential, and, they're going to have a new coach. We don't know who that is yet, but there's a lot of decisions that, especially Eastern Conference wise on, what some of these upper teams will do. And, but again, with no marquee free agent star out there, I think it's going to be kind of a slow off season.
It probably will be. And if they reduce the amount of exhibition games for next season, can you envision them playing maybe a 60, 70 games regular season for next year?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with 60. That kind of seems like a number that for whatever reason is stuck in my head. So we'll have to see who or what they come up with, but at this point, it's kind of, you know, the draft becomes a lot more important right now. You know, so, you know, teams will have to focus on that. But obviously where, you know, teams like Milwaukee and Toronto and even Philadelphia are picking, unless you kind of get really lucky, it's difficult to get an impact player down there. You know, like I think Milwaukee is picking at 24, and they have Toronto down at 29, according to the list I'm looking at. So I don't know how many impact guys are going to be down there when these guys get on the clock.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to get too much when they make those selections. That would enable them to get over the hump. Unless they get extremely lucky. And, you know, it's been happened before.
Yeah.
There's been some surprises before, but more often than not, it's not going to do them a lot of good with those selections.
Yeah, again, it is possible, you know, to find that guy, you know, maybe, you know, or maybe they can, you know, use the pick and a player to possibly move up if that's something they're interested in trying to do. You know, you don't know what other teams are looking for, or how many teams are willing to move out of their spots. But
everything is so uncertain now, though. It's going to be a tougher than usual off season for basketball and hockey both.
Yeah, and it looks like Milwaukee only has the one pick. According to this list, I don't see them listed in the second round, so they must have traded that pick off to somebody. So
they'll still be the favorite to win in their division next year, of course, but I don't know if they're quite good enough to get into the finals. Maybe
yeah,
the finals,
you know,
in the East, possibly, but that's a stretch too.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, of course, it's gonna, you know, there's so much depending on, you know, who they add or what they manage to do that could change it. But yeah, with the way they're constructed right now, I don't see them being a championship contender. But I know you'll be excited about this. This mock draft has the Bulls taking Killian Hayes, who is apparently a point guard out of France, with the fourth pick.
Well, that's always a hit or miss, and then sometimes they'll luck out and make a good selection for a European player, but a lot of those selections have tanked too, so I am not confident about that selection.
And oddly, I believe it's Tony Kukoc's birthday. I think it was today or yesterday. So, you know, they're going to take a European player in his honor. I don't know. So, but yeah, we'll, you know, it should be interesting. And I am kind of wondering how, you know, some of these teams are going to react. You know, I mean, you can throw a team like, you know, the Clippers in there. You know, I mean, they put it all on the line this year. You know, they signed Kawhi Leonard. They made the big trade for Paul George, and they didn't even get to the conference finals.
No.
So you got to consider, you know, what kind of changes are going to be made there. You know, there's been some rumors about possibly replacing Doc Rivers. I don't know if that's the best idea, but, you know, that this is what teams do in these situations. So, you know, and, you know, can they add, you know, do they have enough cap room to add the, you know, the pieces around those two guys that they would need to compete with the Lakers? So we'll, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out.
And what about the draft selection? Have they come up with a date or a month yet when they're going to have it?
Yeah, you know, I believe they did. They did announce that. I'm on the site here. Let me see if I can actually find something on it. So, here we go. See if this gives me a date. Because they announced when the draft was going to be and when free agency was going to be. So we'll have to see. Yeah, they announced the draft for November 18th. So 2 months we have.
Well, that'll be here before you know it.
So,
a cold wintry night or Thanksgiving night, we'll be able to sit down and see who the teams select this time.
So, yeah, and, you know, the advantage with the NBA draft, it's only two rounds and it goes pretty fast, so it's a lot easier to watch than the other ones.
Yeah, I haven't been paying too much attention, as you well know, to the NBA. I've been deciding how much money I want to invest in the NHL finals, if I should pick Dallas or Tampa.
So, yeah, it's unfortunately the NHL finals are kind of has two teams that I'm not really invested in. So I, you know, a little disappointed by that, but I'll have to, you know, make sure I check it out and see who's who. But I guess if I had to go, I would kind of like to see the underdog win, and I'm guessing that's got to be Dallas.
Yeah, of course it's got to be Dallas. I was thinking the same thing, and Tampa has to be the favorite to win this one.
So yeah, you know, we'll see how that works. And I didn't look. When do they get started? Do they get started tomorrow, or are they waiting until Sunday?
Hey, I'm not sure. I thought it was sometime this weekend, but I forgot which specific date it was. It'll be interesting
actually,
to see how well they do in the ratings, by the way. I'm not predicting too much in the way of ratings for the NHL finals for this year.
Yeah, they get rolling tomorrow. They're on 6:30 on NBC, so they're on the main network for the weekend. And then it looks like they're just doing the every other day thing, unlike the NBA, who just gave the Lakers a week off so LeBron could be rested and ready to make his championship run. I don't know why they just don't give him the trophy at the beginning of the year, since they set it up this way, but that's just me.
Well, we've seen that backfire too. When the team is off for a long period of time, they're rusty, and after the first two games, they may not play as well as you might think they would.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm convinced the fix is in, and they're going to do everything they can to make sure LeBron not only gets to the finals but wins the title. They're not going to let him, let him not get the championship. So,
did not pick Miami to go to the finals, though. Of course, it's not done yet, but they are really the surprise team this season so far.
Yeah, well, they've been playing, really well. They were the hot team, not only in the bubble but coming into the playoffs. That's where you needed to be with kind of the weird setup they had going with everything. So, we'll see if they can, keep it rolling. It would be great to see, anybody but the Lakers win the title, but that's just me. And unfortunately, I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't count.
No, like I said, the NBA is going to fully make sure that LeBron is, LeBron wins this title. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. It's just, how long do they want to stretch it out, and, where do they want to go with it? But, unfortunately, that's where we live. And, yes, I'm saying the NBA is fixed, because it is. There's no way you can tell me it's not at this point. So, but the other part of the reason I don't watch a whole lot of it, because it's garbage. But, if you're interested, the Lakers actually do find their way back on the court to play game one against the Nuggets tonight. So you can find that game on TNT if you're really interested. I can tell you I won't be turning it on, but I'm sure there's five or ten people out there who want to watch, right?
Right, there is. And now playing in a neutral court, they don't have to get one of these crazy West Coast starts that they normally would have got, like a 9:30 time. So they can go into prime time if they want to, and they probably will.
And that's what they did. They've got an 8 o'clock start here for you and I in the central time zone is where they're going. So, that puts them right in the middle of prime time, which is where they want the game. And, nobody will still watch it anyways. The ratings stink, but – you got to try. That's where it's got to go. So.
Yeah, and I have a feeling you're not going to be tuning in to see much of that game, if any.
No, I doubt I'll even flip by and get a score, just because I care so little about what they do. And You know, the sad part is I used to really like it, and I used to watch all the games, you know, whenever I could get a game, not just, you know, the Bulls, but I would, you know, hunt down the other games. But now it's not even worth the effort.
I always used to look forward to the playoffs because the teams played defense then as compared to what they did during the regular season. But unfortunately, it doesn't seem to hold true anymore.
Yeah, no, that, you know, that went away. You know, once the Warriors started winning championships, defense was pretty much, well, one, they legislated it out of the game because, you know, you can't touch the other guy or else the whistle goes off. So, you know, you got to deal with that. And then, of course, you know, everybody wants to shoot the three. So it's like, hey, great, here you go.
I've always hated in the playoff game, a tightly contested, close playoff game decided by the referee in the last few seconds of the game. That always bothered me.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just, you know, just kind of the way it goes. But we'll, you know, we'll have to see what they, you know, what they come up with or how, you know, how it's going to work out. But I, you know, I can't see it being any different than LeBron holding the title and everybody bowing down to him and trying to tell everybody that he's better than Michael Jordan, which he'll sadly never be. So
no, that's for sure. Not to say he's not a great ball player. He's a good ball player, very good ball player.
Yeah, you know, he'll go down in history as the second best NBA player of all time. You know, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, he'll be ahead of a lot of, you know, obviously fantastic players, but, you know, and just because I live in Chicago or the Chicago area isn't the reason I'm saying it. He's just not better than Michael Jordan. Just
no.
Flat out.
No, and no one was, but I can think of a few players that might give him a battle. LeBron and battle in the top five, and I'm thinking of Chamberlain and many others who might be considered number two.
You know, I mean, you can, you know, you and a lot that has to depend on, like, what you like or who you like in a player, you know, on how you kind of rank things out. Like, I saw one, I think it was a few weeks ago that actually had LeBron out of the top 10. He was number 11. And, you know, I mean, all the guys he had in the top 10 had really good merit. It's just the way, you know, you look at it, you know, now. I mean, it's up to you how, you know, you decide things. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you go back through NBA history. I mean, you know, you mentioned Wilt. There's, of course, Kareem. You know, you got Magic and Bird and, you know, Oscar Robertson. And, I mean, the names just go on and on of great players.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be I wouldn't argue about them being ahead of LeBron as players also, those players you mentioned.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, they're right there. I know I saw somebody post Bird's playoff stats against LeBron's, and Bird was much, much better in the playoffs, but you know, again, it's just your take on what, you know, you want to do or see, because, you know, you can't compare eras, you know,
no.
As much as you'd want to, you know, you just can't do it. And, you know, that's like I heard the guy saying, you know, well, you know, Steph Curry would be able to be successful in any era. And, you know, you have to wonder, would he be if guys picked him up full court like they used to and stayed with him the entire time?
Yeah, I don't think he'd be quite as successful as he was when the rules got lax in terms of defense.
Right. You know, and I mean, you know, obviously he's a fantastic shooter, you know, but back in those days, you know, back as you work your way back into the NBA, guys like Steph Curry were guys who came off the bench because unless you can get a look for you by yourself, which not too many NBA guys can do anymore, you were going to get stopped because they were going to be right on you. You know, that's just how they used to play the game. So, but you know, again, you know, it's tough. You can't drop him in there and say, well, definitely he would do this or he would be this. You know, you just don't know, and it kind of drives me nuts when, well, you know, LeBron would be successful in any era. Well, would he be after he got knocked on his ass a few times? You know, even though he's a big dude, there would have been guys who would have knocked him on his rear end.
Yeah, so, I think he would have been successful, but maybe not quite as successful as he's been over the past decade.
Right. You know, and that's always the, you know, the question, you know, because they're like, well, you know, how good would Jordan be? And, well, you know, he'd be fine because he worked on his three-point shooting. You know, remember, at the end of his career, he could really shoot the three. So he would have been okay.
Well,
you know, and, you know, maybe.
Yeah, he became
you
a
know,
much
maybe
more
not
effective three-point shooter when he came back after playing minor league baseball. He kind of concentrated
yeah.
on those three-point shots a lot more than he did before.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that's how, you know, I mean, you know, you got to be able to, you know, alter your game with whatever time you're playing in. So, you know, but yeah, it's, you know, it's apples and oranges. You know, is LeBron a great player? Yes. But again, there's a lot of great players that played this game. So we'll, you know, we just got to kind of wait and see.
Yeah, well, these debates have been going on in all sports for years, and you're never going to come up with a firm conclusion on any of them.
No, well, that's like Dan had the other day. Somebody was trying to compare if Babe Ruth could play in this era, and they didn't think he could, but I kind of came back with, well, he could be a pitcher because he was a successful left-handed pitcher.
He was a great he was a great pitcher, and he could also be a very good DH too.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, obviously, you know, he would have his spot, you know, and I mean, with the way the ball is juiced up, he would hit some home runs, you know, I mean, you know, just you look at those guys and, you know, and I always get tired of that. Well, you know, he never really faced a relief pitcher. You know, some of these relief pitchers aren't very good. So I think he would be okay against them later in games, but. You know, that's just, you know, one of those things you get to deal with.
Yeah, I think Ty Cobb would be successful also, but of course they wouldn't let him pull all the shenanigans he got away with when he played ball.
Yeah. Yeah, all the stuff he used to do has been legislated out of the game. You know, he would spend more time on the suspended list than, you know, where, you know, than anything else. But I do need to get your opinion on this because I talked Dan and I talked about this yesterday, and there was a poll on Twitter. MLB put out a poll that asked who was your Cy Young winner, and they gave you the choices of Jacob DeGrom, Yu Darvish, and Trevor Bauer. And I answered Yu Darvish, and then my reason being was because in reality, he's the only one really pitching for a contender. And apparently I kind of upset some people with that answer. Some people came at me pretty hard, you know, explaining that the Reds were now in second place, even though they're 25 and 26, and I wouldn't really call them a contender. But, you know, I mean, out of those three guys, where do you land?
Tough. My first thought would be Bauer. But because Darvish right behind him, because he has not looked good the last couple of times out. If you remember, he's kind of fought a little bit too. So how would you pick him overall?
So right, and that's the thing. I mean, it's a full season stat. It's not how you looked in your last start or your last couple starts. So you know, just because he went out and struggled in his last outing doesn't tarnish the fact that he's really been the guy who kept the Cubs in the race. And without him, they wouldn't be in first place. Where the Reds are under 500, and they're only going to get in the playoffs on a technicality because they've been expanded. So, you know, and the Mets aren't even in the playoffs. even though there's eight teams, the Mets still couldn't find their way in
as good
as DeGrom has been. And now DeGrom is hurt, so he probably won't make his last start or two. They would be stupid to run him out there and take the chance of injuring him with the situation they're in. So, yeah, I just think it, because they're all really even statistically. So you've got to figure out a way to break that tie. And, you know, the way to do it is obviously Darvish has had more important starts. You know, his starts have meant more to the Cubs than what DeGrom starts and Bauer starts have meant to their teams.
In years past, that hasn't always been a factor of whether or not you were a contender, pitching for a contending team or not. Maybe it's more important, though, for this shortened season, as you pointed out, which is a good point, by the way. In a normal 162-game season, you'd have to discount whether or not the pitcher in contention for a Cy Young pitch for a contender or not. But maybe that's a good point, though, for this shortened season. Maybe that should be considered as a significant, more so than a normal 162-game season.
Yeah, you know, and especially with the fact that nobody has distanced themselves from anybody like Shane Bieber has in the American League. You know, he's clearly the best pitcher in the American League. Some other guys will all get some, you know, some votes, but I won't be surprised if he's a unanimous selection when these awards come out. But yeah, you know, you can't say that in the National League. You know, when you start to look at these guys and everything just kind of, just really kind of hodgepodges together. Bauer's
season, though.
You know,
yeah, it's so compressed,
right,
the season, that you have to make some distinctions between your normal decision-making and if it were a regular season. The same thing with an MVP, by the way.
Yeah. Well, you know, like you look at the numbers, Bauer's ERA is 171. He does have two complete games and two shutouts, but I believe they were both seven-inning affairs. So he didn't really rack up the big totals, but he's only 4-3. Darvish's ERA is 186, so he's not that far behind him. DeGrom is now at 209. Darvish is 7-2, and DeGrom is 4-1. So Darvish has obviously kept his team in position to win more games than the other two have. So, you know, and then, you know, the weird thing is, like, how overlooked Corbin Burnes of the Brewers gets. You know, while he is only 3-0, he's got a 198 ERA. So,
yeah.
You know, they forgot about him. He just kind of got left out. And then Max Fried is right there with a 198 ERA as well for the Braves. So,
and you're going to have to make it. Of course, the playoffs coming up in a week or so, week and a half, will not be a factor when they determine the Cy Young or the MVP, will it? Even in a shortened season.
No. Yeah, no. That has no actual effect on the awards. I know there have been some people lobbying to put that in, but not everybody gets into the playoffs, so that's really not a fair barometer on how to judge guys. So,
right. Well, this season is an aberration, and I'm coming to the conclusion that you have a very sound point about Darvish, only because it's a 60-game season. It will be entirely different for a regular. It will be entirely different decision making for a 162-game season.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if you could give me a guy with 30 starts or 33 starts and, show me that, you know, they did this, and even if their team didn't win, you know, basically like DeGrom has done the past 2 years, you know, he's won the award the last 2 years, even though the Mets have stunk. You know, I don't have really any issue with that. You know, if he's the best guy, he's the best guy. And it's odd that they'll vote for a guy like DeGrom, or as an MVP, they'll vote for a guy like Mike Trout, and they leave out the fact that, you know, well, it doesn't matter where, you know, where their teams are in the standings. but yet then they use that against other guys who are, you know, having good, well, you know, look at where his team is in the standings, but you just voted for Jacob DeGrom. So it always kind of baffles me when guys do that. And I hear, you know, my good friend Brian Kenny on the NFL Network or on the MLB Network brings that crap up all the time. He'll tell you what a great player Mike Trout is and how he deserves to be the MVP, but then he'll leave out some other guy who's on a team who's not in the playoffs. And when they ask it about him, he'll go, well, you know, look at where his team is. So it makes me nuts.
Yeah, well, when you're talking about that, though, think about years past in a full regular season. I believe Ernie Banks won it 2 years in a row, and you know how well the Cubs did those 2 years.
Yeah, well, you know, there are some exceptions to the rules. You know, Alex Rodriguez won one on a last-place team. You know, sometimes the guy is just so good, you have to take notice of what he's doing. You know, but the question is now, would have Banks won them with, you know, the sabermetrics they plug in and the way the Cubs did? You know, you would have to wonder if maybe they would have looked at somebody else just because of that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying they will, but that's kind of, unfortunately, the way they do things now. And it just, it makes me goofy because it's only for, you know, basically like guys who aren't Mike Trout.
Yeah. And when you think of the title, most valuable player, is he really the most valuable player? If he hits 350 and drives in 115 runs in a regular season and his team winds up in last place, is that a misnomer?
Yeah,
I don't know. A great performance is being punished because of he's playing on a bad team.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if he put up those kind of numbers, I would be okay with it. I don't know. You know, maybe most valuable is the wrong term because really it's the award for the best player.
Yeah.
You know, the things that like bother me is like this year, Trout's hitting .295 and he's got 16 home runs. So he's having a good year. But there are people who have still mentioned him in the MVP talk. But when you look at it, he's not even top five for sure. And you could probably put him back to 7 or 8 easily, with the way some of these other guys have played in situations, but yet because he's Mike Trout, they're willing to give him more credit for just having a good year compared to a guy like Luke Voit, who's having a career year, even though it's only a 60 game season.
Yeah. He's playing out of his mind this year.
Yeah.
There's two players in the American League for the White Sox that should be given strong consideration as well. That would be Abreu and Tim Anderson.
Yeah, you know, and you almost wonder if they're going to cancel each other out in the voting, and neither of them is going to win. So.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because, you know, you can almost guarantee the fact that Luke Voit plays for the Yankees that he's going to get all the East Coast votes just because that's how biased they are when it comes to that kind of stuff. And, you know, let's face it, a lot of the baseball writers who vote for this don't really deserve to be voting for it. But, you know, they've got the accreditation or whatever they need, so they get the vote. But, you know, he's not the MVP. Yes, he's having a very good year. You know, but he's not the MVP. Jose Abreu should be the American League MVP, and Nelson Cruz should probably finish second to him. You know, I know Cruz is going to get dinged because he's just a DH, but he's having a fantastic year, and he deserves to be rewarded for it. You know, of course, these were the same idiots who couldn't manage to vote Jorge Soler into the top 10 last year. Soler got one 10th-placed MVP vote after the year he had. Why? Because he plays for the Royals, even though he led, I believe, the American League in home runs, and that's one of the things they talk about the most. Somehow they just kind of forgot to do that when it came to Soler last year, and he was left off every ballot but one, which is just embarrassing when it comes to voting.
Yeah, I would give some, even though Voight's having a great year, I would give strong consideration to Tim Anderson, because he's really a catalyst for for a team that has the best record in the American League.
Yeah, you know, Anderson is definitely top five. I don't think he could finish ahead of Abreu. You know, so I could definitely see him coming in the top five. You know, I mean, you know, there are some, you know, underrated guys who are doing really well on good teams. You know, like, you won't hear anybody mention the name Teoscar Hernandez, but he's put together a really good year in Toronto to help them out. You know, DJ LeMahieu is having another fantastic year for the Yankees. You know, so you can kind of, you know, you throw him into that mix. You know, and yeah, you know, there's a lot of, and I know they don't want to hear it, but Alex Verdugo has played really good for a really bad Red Sox team. You know, he won't get any votes, but he's had a really good year. You know, but then you're going to get these Mike Trout votes, and you're kind of like, wait, why? Why is he in your top five? Because you're not paying attention to the game and you don't know any better? Oh, okay, that's why.
Yeah, I don't see him being in the top five this year, but stranger things have happened.
Surprise when he comes rolling in, you know, the votes come out and he comes rolling in the top five. You know what I mean? Another guy who's having almost a breakout season after as much as he struggled, you know, J-Mark Candelario's doing really good for the Tigers this year.
He is.
But,
definitely.
You know, I mean, you know, he fell out of playoff contention. He's no longer an MVP candidate, but, you know, he's having a good year.
And
you know, and I mean, then you've got...
Are these decisions going to be made before the end of the season, by the way, in terms of MVP and Cy Young for this season?
Yeah, you know, and then you got to factor in the idiots that are going to vote for Shane Bieber, even though he only appeared in, you know, 12 games. You know, there'll be multiple idiots that vote for him as the MVP. So even though the Cy Young is basically the MVP award for pitchers, there's always morons out there who feel that pitchers can be MVPs, and in reality, only closers should be, because starters just don't impact enough games to be valid MVP candidates. Even when they're making 30 starts, that's not enough in a 162-game season. I'm sorry.
No, that's why the Cy Young is there, for pitchers.
And you know, unless you go 30-0 and your ERA is below one, then you're an MVP. But other than that, yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, who was the Detroit pitcher who won 31 games? I'm trying to remember his name now.
Denny McClain.
What was that?
Denny McClain?
Yeah. Right now, did he win the MVP as well as the Cy Young?
Well, if you let me give me a second, I can bing it here, and I will let you know how he did that year. Yeah, I do wonder. I don't remember what year it was, so we'll have to see where he came up at. So there he is.
One of the
okay.
Great years in the modern era in pitching.
Yes, he did. He won the Cy Young and the MVP award in 1968.
Yeah, I thought it was in the late 60s. But, that's a deserving award. But as you pointed out, he did win over 30 games that year, so I think it was a correct decision.
Yeah, well, here you go. You want to hear numbers that you'll never hear again in your lifetime? He went 31-6. We know that. His ERA was 1.96. He made 41 starts. 28 of those starts were complete games. And he pitched 336 innings. Yeah, nobody will ever do that again.
That will never happen again. Never. Never. Not even close.
Yeah. But just looking, you know, and that's the one thing that always kind of makes me laugh when I look at the stats from, you know, anybody who was an older player like that. It's like, good Lord, they made how many starts? Because now, you know, when a guy gets to 30, they start to panic. So.
Yeah, when you think of back some of the starters in those eras, like, well, you mentioned McLean, of course, and of course there's Bob Gibson and Fergie Jenkins. How many starts are those guys making a season, and how many innings do they pitch?
Yeah, they used to regularly make, 40 starts, 300 innings. I remember when I first started watching, if a quality starting pitcher didn't get the 300 innings, there was something wrong.
Yeah, exactly right. And when Mr. Gibson gave the manager the glare, he's going to say, okay, keep going. he wouldn't dare take him out.
That may be the biggest change in baseball is just the way they handle pitchers now. It's just like, really? Okay, well, here we go. So
sometimes I think it backfires on them, though. The funny thing is, those guys were healthier than the pitchers who are babied now. They didn't have any injuries. I mean, maybe they had, they did on occasion, but Fergie was pretty sound, and so was Mr. Gibson. And look at all the innings those guys pitch every year, year after year after year.
Yeah, it's just so strange that. You go back and you look at, some of those Hall of Fame guys, and, go back pretty much as far as you want. Rarely any of them had arm trouble.
Yeah.
And, why is that? I think it goes back to, and I'm guessing because I don't know, is just the fact that they weren't overused as children. And they weren't pitching, 200 innings in a summer. It wasn't their deal. They probably didn't get overused till they got to high school when there were no rules and the best guys could pretty much pitch every day if you wanted them to. You just got to wonder about that. What's so different?
And what a proliferation of injuries over Tommy John surgeries that have come up over the last 10 years or so. Just incredible when you think about it.
So, yeah, and I still won't forget when, Nolan Ryan took over as, I believe he was president of the Texas Rangers.
Right.
And one of the things he said he wanted to do was teach their pitchers how to go deeper into games. And he got so much heat for that, it wasn't even funny.
Yeah, well, he's thinking about his own performance. And he practiced what he preached. You have to give him that, right?
Yeah. And he wasn't saying that, guys had to go out there and pitch, nine innings every start. He was just like, because obviously guys are going, in some cases with this setup, three innings. But in a, general year, it's, five. You get a starter going five and they look to get him out. And, that's what he was talking about. And it was just unbelievable the amount of heat he got from the, oh, God, he's going to hurt all his pitchers. And it's like, they train these guys to do this. Why is it so bad for a pitcher to go through the order a third time? He's a good pitcher, he can get these guys out.
I wonder if they kept track of the amount of pitches a pitcher did in the 60s, for example, with Gibson and Jenkins. If they pitched a complete nine-inning game, did they pitch 130 pitches, 140 pitches? I wonder if they even kept track then.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to say they didn't, I would guess. I know there have been people that have went back and looked. Because I believe I remember seeing a game where Juan Marichal pitched into extra innings and he just threw a enormous number of pitches. I think it was over 200. And it was just kind of like, oh my God, I could imagine the insanity that would go on today if a guy got anywhere close to that number.
I wonder how many pitches Harvey Haddix pitched in a perfect game that he didn't get. He went into, I think it went 12 innings before he gave up a hit. I wonder how many pitches he threw for that game.
Yeah, it, you know, it would be interesting to, you know, kind of know what, you know, what these guys were doing or how it was going, or you know, I'm sure there's people who have kind of went back on the tapes and been like, oh, okay, well, let's see, you know, how many he threw or something like that. But
yeah, it's been fairly rare. I would say, what would you say, 10, 15 years they've been keeping track of the pitches for a pitcher in a given game now? It hasn't been all that long.
Yeah, maybe 20, I think, is when it started. You know, whenever the rash of Tommy John injury started is when they started looking at, you know, oh my God, we've got to look and see what, you know, what's causing this. So, you know, well, he's throwing too many
pitches. It's very heavy that how successful those surgeries are. I mean, most of the time they work out very well for the pitcher. I'm sure there's been some exceptions, obviously, but it's certainly resurrected a lot of careers.
Yeah,
it
really
is. Surgery.
No, that's been life-saving for, you know, for people, you know, for pitchers. And, you know, it's almost a rite of passage now when you get one. So,
yeah, the first one was really kind of a speculative thing. No one knew if it would work or not, but obviously they did a terrific job, and it's, as you pointed out, it has saved a lot of pitchers' careers.
It sure has. So we'll have to have to see if it. You know, how many guys keep getting it, though? You know, it would be nice to see if they got to the point where they didn't need it anymore, but who knows?
Yeah. That's the current trend in baseball. No matter how few innings a starter will pitch.
So, but all right, well, we're running out of time here, but I don't want to forget, because I want to make a couple picks here. You know, the Twins just got done playing the White Sox. Well, now they stayed in town to play the Cubs. So there's a 3-game series starting tonight. We start off with Rich Hill against Kyle Hendricks tonight. So Rich Hill, a former Cub. Then it's Michael Pineda against Alec Mills on Saturday. Obviously, Mills coming off the no-hitter. And then Sunday night, they're the Mickey Mouse Network game for Sunday night. It's Jose Berrios against Yu Darvish. Oddly and surprisingly, I didn't realize the Twins actually have a better record than the Cubs, but only by about a half game. So who wins the series and how many games?
Well, I'm gonna take a deep breath and say the Cubs will win 2 out of 3.
So, you know, and then obviously you missed out last week, even though in reality you shouldn't have. Somehow the Bears found a way to win that game. Of course, if, you know, the guy catches the touchdown pass in the end zone like he should have, it's a completely different story. So they're going to let him play again, believe it or not. The New York Giants come into town to play the Bears. Do the Bears go 2-0?
Well, I went against them last week. This week I hope I'm not the kiss of death. I think the Bears will beat the Giants on Sunday.
You know, I got to tell you, it would actually be quite humorous if you somehow managed to pick every Bear game wrong.
Yeah.
That would be something I would do.
And one, I don't know if we have time to say this, but I do blame the coach of Detroit for losing that game last week when he made that fifth decision to go for a 55-yard field goal.
All right, well, see, we can end on that. I let you get your statement in, and now we can go away. Thank you. go listen to the podcast anytime you want at TuneIn.com. Have a good weekend.